Riley Smith had that look. He gets the puck again, far wing. Up top, Marchessault. He shoots. Wide right. Rebound. Score! Alex Tuck! And the Knights score on the power play. 1-0 Vegas with 5:13 to go in the first period. Playing with Kopitar and Brown on the top line today with Haiafalo scratched. Right wing shot. Score! Dion Phaneuf from the right point ties it up. A power play goal for Los Angeles.
Yeah, Sunday morning. Here we go again, man. It just seems like it was just here. 8 to 9, out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM, 98.9 FM. And we'll do that backwards and forwards. And this is the home of the Vegas Golden Knights on the radio. We are here every Sunday morning at the exact same time. If you're looking to find us on social media, at Out of Line, 1340 AM. And Facebook is just simply Out of Line. Check it out. It's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Hey, if you want to give us a call, please, by all means, do. The Fox Sports studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. A great place to watch every game. In studio today, as always, myself, Brian Feldman, to my right on your radio dial, Missy Lynn. We've got Jose on my left of your radio dial. We got Magnum in front of me running the wheels of steel and making sure everything goes smoothly here, like it does at T-Mobile Arena every night, right? Anyways, Nightcap is the first part of the show. It's going to take up a lot of the show. It's the Vegas Golden Knights. They are up 2-0. On the Los Angeles Kings in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Pretty darn cool. Post-game one-on-ones. We got Marc-Andre Fleury, something from him. You'll hear Tomas Tatar. Just a lot of good stuff, man, that we got going on with the Golden Knights. Also, Alan Snell, the founder of LVSportsBiz.com, will join with our Sports Biz Minute. And we're also going to have in studio, in a little while, it's pretty cool. But about the second half of the show, we're getting ready for a fight this coming Friday night. It is the WBA North American Bantamweight Belt, and it is going to be up for grabs at the Cox Pavilion. And Max, the baby-faced assassin, Ornelas, and he is going to
nice
be here with his his trainer and manager Gil Martinez. He's pretty excited. Hey, the kid's a UNLV student, and he is also boxing on campus. So 10-0, man. The guy is undefeated, one draw, and he avenged that draw too. We'll talk all about that and more when he gets in here. Las Vegas 51's report. We are going to give away a couple of family four packs for Las Vegas 51's baseball. And the best and worst part of the show is you can check us out on Facebook as well. My page, Missy Lynn's page. We also have Jose Valonte's page as well. So check us all out. Mags, we'll try to share it over there. So everywhere you can get it, we'll try. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn a degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day because they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
Neal weaving right up to the blue line, has two men with him to the right side. Hallett gets down low. He scores! Eric Hallett wins it! 2-1 Knights! With 4:37 left in the second overtime, James Neal to Eric Howe, and the Knights take a 2-0 series lead. Kings have control again, 10 seconds left. Kings left to right, way up to the line for Dowdy, into the zone, to the right side, Kopitar with 5 seconds. Kopitar bumped, puck to the right corner, around behind with two, with one, it's over! Knights win it! Vegas defeats Los Angeles 1-0 in their first ever postseason contest.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, pretty exciting finish, as you heard Dan Duva on both those wins, and you're talking about just some extremely exciting hockey that's been going on at T-Mobile Arena. I'm lost for words. I'm still exhausted, man. The other night was probably one of the most electrifying events I've been at. I mean, I've been to two Super Bowls. I've seen some pretty cool events in my life. NBA Finals, U.S. Open. I can't even tell you how many big playoff games, Stanley Cup finals in Detroit, NBA finals. Last night was, or I should say two nights ago, was probably one of the most exciting events I've ever been at in my life. And to the point where...
And it just didn't want to stop double overtime,
yeah,
I mean.
And it's to the points where the fans, not only were the players and everyone exhausted, you even noticed until they won the game at the end, the fans were getting tired, man. I mean, it was just a long game. But... wow, is all I can say.
You know what's funny about that? You talk about the fans getting tired. Yesterday, before the team was sent off, which, by the way, was absolutely, if you've seen any of the videos.
Yeah, the send-off looked
amazing. From City National Arena, I was out there, and it was ridiculous. I mean, it's like some of the players were, you know, who've played in traditional hockey markets, they were saying this is unlike anything they've ever seen. Like Pierre-Edward Belmar compared it to Philadelphia. He said, you know, the intensity of the fans in Vegas is a lot like Philadelphia. He said, you know, the way that they're, and he's like, he was talking about even in like the fifth period, as he called it, said the fans were still unbelievably intense. John Merrill said yesterday that when he shows up at City National Arena, he's like, I'm not even one of the more well-known guys in the team. And he's like, and they go absolutely crazy when I roll up. The video of Derek England leaving the arena to go to the airport in the convertible. It's like, it's unreal watching it. But the funny thing is, Riley Smith said yesterday that people were falling asleep in the stands. So despite the fact that they're playing a double overtime playoff hockey game, Riley Smith, who is a very good player, happened to notice that people were sleeping because they showed them on the scoreboard was a couple.
And they're getting booed.
And I don't think they were plants because if they were plants, I don't think they would have Golden Knights jerseys on.
Yeah, no, they were exhausted. And you know what? Everyone sitting next to me in the press, what we noticed was right before double overtime, people started leaving and we're like, oh my goodness, this is how we're going to find out if we're true fans or not. Are they really leaving? Because now there wasn't any more beers allowed at that point. Oh. So we're like, are they actually going to go outside, go on the screen and watch it from there? We're kind of freaking out. But everyone did end up coming back in. And, I mean, you see how rowdy everyone got at the end. So I was actually impressed that they came back, regardless of having cocktails or not.
It's crazy because, you know, Frank and Clayton, they do the post-game show from Beer House.
Right.
And they had to leave. They leave at the end of the third period. They said the people outside in Toshiba Plaza were just as crazy and just as loud as the people inside the arena. They said it was unbelievably thick. They were showing the game on that big screen, but then they had a screen, like a video of the game up on the glass of the arena. Wow. On the arena, they were showing the game on the glass.
That's way cool.
I think it says T-Mobile Arena up on, and that's where they were showing the game. And it's like, and Clayton said, yeah, it was pretty clear. There was no delay. It was, you know, it was a really cool thing to see. And I guess, you know, They're going to be doing viewing parties, but this team just continues to impress. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Here's the thing, man. Number one, I can't believe anybody's amazed in any way, shape, or form that people were falling asleep. It's a Friday night in Las Vegas, and people are drinking. So if a game lasts for 4 hours, the alcohol is eventually going to get to them, and they're going to start falling asleep. They're going to pass out. I mean, it's the way it is. Thank God they cut them off, because they're not going to ever get cut off in the arena. That's just not the way it works. But
yeah, it's the NHL is actually covering it. That's where we're deciding, like, well, it's Vegas. You're allowed to drink anywhere, but it goes by regulation as far as
it's a game.
Same thing
any game. But what all I can say is, man, oh man, you can't blame anyone for getting exhausted. That game itself was exhausting as a fan in the best possible way. And thank God the Vegas Golden Knights came out on top, because if they didn't win this game, a loss like that could be catastrophic at home, going on the road for two games after that. You got to a point where, you know, if they would have just lost the game regular, like even gotten blown out, you can recover. You come back in the next game and you're good. But when you lose a game in double overtime on your home ice, and then you got to go on the road for two games, that could have completely turned the series around. So,
well, especially when you're the better team on the ice.
Because, oh my God, they outshot them 2-1.
But not only that, but you know, Vegas, I thought they looked like they were the fresher team there in that double overtime. I mean, you saw guys from the Kings just completely during shifts. They were taking longer getting to the bench than their actual shifts on the ice. You know, and one of the things was, like I mentioned to Belmar yesterday, his line in that double overtime with Nosek and Carrier, they were still flying around like it was the second period. I mean, they still had their legs. And, you know, he said maybe it was because we didn't play as much in the first overtime, but still. And that was something you noticed, that they were, that Gallant was kind of skipping shifts with those guys. But he told me Nosek was the best player on the ice in the double overtime. And I tend to agree. I mean, he still had the speed. He did the things that he normally does. I mean, and Shea Theodore in overtime, it was like
Alex Tuck too. Yeah, it was the young legs. You're talking about all the guys that are under 23 years of age,
but
they're playing the best at the end of the game because they still got a little bit of life left in them.
The funny thing is, you know,
23.
Yeah, exactly.
I mentioned that to Alex Tuck about, you know, what would it have been like had they lost that game, and his response, and Tuck is usually a guy who will tell you, you know, when you ask him, and his response to me was, well, I don't know, we didn't lose, so.
You started laughing, actually.
Pretty cool. I mean, Wednesday night it started out. I mean, it's such a different feel from leaving the studio last week to right now when they've got two wins under their belt. Nearly three hockey games have been played, only two, but the last one had an extra two periods in it. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but Marc-Andre Fleury has given up one goal in basically seven periods of hockey.
Wow.
And that is...
And it came on the power play.
It came on a power play.
So he hasn't even given up an even strength goal.
True. You know, the goaltending we have witnessed in these first two games on both sides has been spectacular. And some people might be upset that you don't see a lot of scoring. I mean, in sports, you want to see scoring. That's what makes it exciting. The absolute fundamentals of these teams, and you can't, I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights have definitely outplayed the LA Kings. First game, decently. Last game, they outplayed them tremendously. Look at the shots, other than the hits. If you want to go by hits, they're getting out hit by the Kings. But it doesn't matter. It's all about putting the puck in the net, and the Golden Knights have been able to do that enough to win. The first night, it was Shea Theodore, and it was early in the game, and it set the tone, maybe for the entire series.
And to the far corner, Nosek. Looks up top. Finds Theodore. Shoots and scores!
I had a chance to talk to Shea Theodore after the game. Somehow I lost that interview, but I will tell you.
Are you sure you talked to him?
Yeah, I know. Well, luckily we have the interview. Actually, you can see it on my Facebook page. It's still sitting up there on the Facebook page, but it's definitely not here on the recorder. Either way, it was really cool talking to a guy that started this year down in Chicago. And we were all surprised, I think, Mags, at the beginning of the year, Shea Theodore getting sent down, especially last year, the way he played in the postseason with Anaheim. He stepped up his game. He got a chance to play due to injuries, and he had that postseason experience. I thought for sure, and you could see last year, he was an offensive-minded defenseman, that last year he was going to be part of this team. And then he gets sent down at the beginning of the year, but maybe that was part of the strategy, light a fire under his ass, because he's had one there all season long since he's been called up.
Yeah, that was really one of the, him and Tuck both being sent to Chicago to start the regular season, and I think Tuck played in every game following his call up from Chicago. I don't think he was a healthy scratch or missed for, he obviously didn't miss for any injury time, but the Theodore thing was really shocking, I think, because to a lot of people he was the best defender during the preseason too, and that included, you know, guys like Nate Schmidt, Braden McNabb, you know, but Theodore's game is a lot different than their game. You know, Theodore is a guy who he skates like a forward, you know, and that's
very
not,
similar to Colin Miller. They're a similar player, except Miller's a little more physical.
And Colin Miller, I think, has a little more confidence in his shot. You know, he scored a lot more points. I think he had 10 goals. I think he had 32, 33 assists, something like that. But, you know, this is the way of the future, I think. You're going to have guys who play defense who are more in the mold of Shea Theodore, where they skate really well. They're able to put the puck on net. You know,
how fast were they going? Like, they were incredible the other day. Like, is there like an amount we can figure out, like a miles per hour, how fast they were going?
Well, just it's playoff speed. I mean, you know, I asked last week to Frank, and he said something we would see in the postseason, which I had wondered, is there another level for this team? Because of the level they had played on all season long, when the puck dropped in October, this team came out flying and playing at a different level. And they've done that the entire season long. They've been able to maintain it. And I thought, thought postseason we could see something different, but
we definitely did. I think that they were so much faster. Well, they were just, I mean, on point.
Yeah, well, they're just, they stepped it up. There was another level. And, but again, you know, it boils down to one player. And I said it last week. I've gotten a lot of heckling for like, oh, wow, they've won two games. You know, you said they'd only win one. I said, it's like, man, you know, but the funny thing is, Mags, when I'm learning this, most of the people that have been criticizing me don't really know hockey and aren't really sports fans because they didn't pay attention to what I said. I said this last week, Mags. Oh, you don't have it?
No, my bad.
Oh, okay, you don't have it, you're saying.
No, I don't have it, no.
Okay, well, last week on the show, you can check out the podcast, I basically said, number 29, this team will go as far as number 29 can carry them. Not that they're not playing great and not that they haven't stepped up their game, but if they don't have Marc-Andre Fleury in net, this is probably a different series. I mean, they've only scored three goals, and
you
it's taken them
Facebook
seven
well.
Players. Yeah, so, I mean, exactly what I said has happened. Marc-Andre Fleury has played lights-out hockey. He's let in one goal, and if that keeps happening, the sky is the limit with this team. And I'm thrilled. I mean, like, well, I said, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope they sweep every series.
You got to look at that from the other end of the spectrum as well, because if the Kings don't have Jonathan Quick in that,
oh, God. Well,
Vegas probably blows them out in game two because, you know, Jonathan Quick, he made a lot of great saves in game one. Game two, he was even better. I mean,
54 saves or 55 saves?
If you are objective about it, and clearly I'm not because I live in Vegas, I want to see the team do well. Because, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of these guys and I like them. And it's like, and I'm a fan of the team, I'm not going to lie. But if you are an objective viewer or watcher of that game, you're saying to yourself, it's really a shame that Jonathan Quick did not win that game because he played so well. You know, if not for Jonathan Quick, Vegas is not only up 2-0, but I don't think L.A. has any chance in game 3 or 4. But because of him, the Kings are still in this series. I don't care if it's 2-0 Vegas. The Kings have the chance to win this series, even though it's going to be tough, because the odds are definitely stacked against them. You know, if you look at the percentages of teams that win first two games at home versus teams that split at home, I think it's like 89% of the teams in the NHL have you know, win the series when they win the first two games at home. But the thing is, I was so amazed at how well Quick was. And, you know, one of the things, and got to give credit to Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, who asked Quick the question, and I thought it was a great question. After the game, he asked him, look, when you get into a double overtime and guys on the ice slow down, the players slow down because they're tired, is it easier to play goalie? And Quick's response was no. There's a lot of really bleeping good players on the ice. And to me, that just says how good of a goalie he is because, you know, with all these great players that are on the ice, for him to still be as good as he was, and Fleury was great as well. And I was talking about it with someone else after the game, and I said, you know, the crazy thing is Fleury has allowed one goal in basically eight periods of hockey. Right? Eight periods of hockey. Seven periods of hockey. And, well, almost eight full periods of hockey because they would have played.
Yeah, you're right. It was 3 to 4 minutes less than 8 periods.
So he's only allowed one goal, and somehow Jonathan Quick has been better.
Well, here's what I was going to say, Mags. You said Jonathan Quick. You said that they wouldn't be where they're at. Mags, without Jonathan Quick, the Kings don't have two Stanley Cups.
No, you're right.
I mean, this guy, 5 years ago, all of a sudden shows up. They make the playoffs in the 82nd game of the season, and they're the eighth team. Everyone disregards them. All of a sudden, this guy, Jonathan Quick, in goal for the LA Kings, becomes the most impermeable goalie maybe in history, and the Kings go all the way and win the Stanley Cup. They metamorphosize hockey on the West Coast. All of a sudden, people are wearing hockey jerseys out here. A couple years later, they do it again. And Mags, both years, they rode the goaltending of Jonathan Quick. And now what's cool is we're getting to see this guy firsthand, how good he is. And Missy and I sat on the ice in the second period. Unfortunately, Quick was at the other end. Yeah. And we saw the only goal scored against Fleury right in front of us in the second period.
Which was such a weird goal, too, because...
Well, it hit England in front.
Yeah, it deflected off of England, and it was kind of a weird shot by Ledoux. And, you know, the thing is, if and it's not England's fault. I mean, obviously, deflections and stuff like that happen. He was playing, you know,
trying to push, get a guy out in front of the net.
Yeah, and it just happened to deflect. But it's like it's crazy just how well the goaltenders have played in this series, because you know, you look at a series like Philadelphia, and it was 7-0 the first game, and it was 4-1 the second game, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and these are two pretty good teams. They've put up like 14 goals. It's pretty crazy.
It is, and you know something? Who is more blazing? It's kind of a good segue, Mags, and you can go ahead and jam this out right now. But who's been more blazing, man, than the goaltending in this series? You want to talk about blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And, of course, during football season, we are there every Monday night. Monday Night Football, giving away replica jerseys and wing parties. But the hottest thing right now, without question, is the goaltending. Fleury, Quick, on fire. And I asked Fleury after the game, and you'll hear this, how he felt, man, after a double overtime. Like Mag said, just about eight periods of hockey.
Feel tired, right? Great feeling, though. Feeling, you know, it was such a long game, right, and at home in front of our fans, and obviously it's a big relief, you know, to get that goal at the end.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is as good as it gets, and he was grinning from ear to ear, but he was completely exhausted, and you just think of how different that mode, his face, his demeanor would have been had they been on the losing end of that. Really, really cool. Listen, on the other side of this, we're going to have Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com, and we're going to talk about something really cool. They fabricated a helmet for the playoffs, and they've been dropping it down to the ice right before the game, and the skaters are skating through it. Alan got to the deal of who came up with the idea, how they did it, and actually it's the same people that put together the castle in the corner. We'll hear from that right after this. Out of line. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 8 to 9. Every Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio is home of the Vegas Golden Knights of the radio. Joining us right now for our LV Sports Business Minute, Alan Snell, the founder and main contributing writer, and only contributing writer right now. Yeah, the stuff
one,
is great.
The only.
Yeah, LVSportsBiz.com. Be one of the 50,000 plus subscribers, man. It is a great site. Alan recently wrote an article last week, I think it was on the 12th, Thursday, on actually about the helmet and how they fabricated it and how they came up with the idea, the marketing company. What's going on, my friend? Uh-oh. Hello, hello? Do we lose him?
Seems like it, yeah.
Oh, might have lost Alan. Well, Mags will try to get him back on. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. That helmet, if you guys haven't seen that thing, and anyone watching the game saw it, it is gigantic, and it drops down to the ice, and the skaters all skate through it, and Fleury leads them out, and it, you know, of course, you get the dry ice, the smoke.
Complete spectacle.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, you know, all stadiums do something at this time of year, but more of you see that more in football than anything else, where they've got like a big giant thing that the players run out of. It was really cool to see it on the ice on the ice here. I thought it was awesome. Matt, we got Alan back?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Hey, what's up, Alan?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So talk to me, my friend. That big helmet. Love the articles, by the way. Like the one yesterday. Two people getting Golden Knights tattoos. I'm not shocked by that.
Is that
all
starting to happen already?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? It's happening all over the place. I've even seen one live.
They were giving them out for free at Toshiba Plaza on Wednesday.
Right.
I was going to get one, but the line was like 80 people deep. So I'll have to pass
Where
on that
would
for
you
now.
On his forehead.
On my neck, right? Isn't that what the kids are doing today? You got to get the tattoo on the neck.
All those young whippersnappers.
I was thinking I could do like a Golden Knights tear, like right underneath my eye and my cheek.
We get a K in it for the Kings. Yeah, like you kill the Kings. No.
You don't want to do that. That's a 1-year thing. That's on for the rest of your life. Alan, tell me about this 20-foot the Golden Knights helmet. 45 seconds it takes. It drops down to the ice, and it really is a very cool prop. How did this thing come about? You wrote about it. If you want to see it, you can check out LVSportsBiz.com. But talk to me, man.
Yeah, this is a really interesting little project. Johnny Greco, the VP for in-game entertainment at the Golden Knights, worked out a deal with a company out of Henderson called WaterFX, which is a 20-year-old company that has a history of installing all kinds of water effects on the strip. And they also have a division that does, quote-unquote, large props, which I guess you can categorize that giant 20-foot tall helmet as a large prop. And they actually worked on this at the beginning, about 12 weeks ago. And the crews over at Water FX were working overtime. They were working extra hours, even on the weekends, to build this. And I have to say, the one thing which, you know, this being Las Vegas, which the in-game entertainment crews are really great at inside that arena, is the whole choreographing of the delivery of that helmet. It was wonderfully done with the lighting system. There was that red glow in the middle. There was kind of a yellow-edged lighting that kind of came to life as it was being lowered. And I learned some really interesting things about the arena. For example, their cable system actually delivers things from the rafters in about 7 minutes. So wow. That was way too long. They actually installed a whole new motor system to deliver this sucker in 45 seconds. And they also changed slightly the intro music to the drop of the helmet. They usually use the same kind of that kind of eerie, intense organ-style music that you hear the players come onto the ice to. Well, I understand that they actually added a filter, and they went through a first loop of it just to kind of slow it down and kind of give it that little extra scary, creepy feeling when it was delivered in game one. And I just thought that I actually asked a couple of the players about not only skating through this thing, but also just adding to the whole atmosphere to the building. And they definitely said it pumped up the fans, and in turn, you know, if you remember on game one, the team came out flying. And I just think this kind of intense just frenzy that the fans are kind of just driven into because of these kind of things really helps the team.
Oh, no question about it. It added to just the spectacle that was or is the playoffs here in Las Vegas. I mean, you know, just the beginning with that, with the helmet dropping down and those towels waving, it was amazing how loud under 19,000 people got in that stadium. And, Alan, we talked about it last week, them trying to make sure that Golden Knights fans got tickets. Well, I'll tell you, I don't know whether it was the monitoring of the sales of tickets or whatever, but you gotta tell me, brother, we've watched this all season long. Right now, I would say the last two games, I have never seen it so partisan, Golden Knights, in that arena where when the Kings score, it's a muffle. And when the Knights score, that place erupts. And especially that little where they have the thing on the monitor and they say the upper section cheer,
oh, that's so
lower
much
section.
Fun.
But when they say locals, it's the loudest cheer of all now, right?
Well, I interviewed several L.A. Kings fans out on the plaza before the game, and they just said, you know, when we come, these tickets are just almost too expensive for us, which I got a great chuckle out of that, because usually you go to Southern California, and you're actually kind of priced out of the scene down there. And I got a chuckle when the Kings fans were actually complaining about buying the tickets from the box office. There was one fan I talked with who said that he bought a ticket for about $215 for the upper bowl right out of the box office. That's not secondary market. That's
wow.
Like straight out of the building. And he said as a result, he said a lot of fans just, they're not going to come. And also, you know, you alluded to the fact that the season ticket holders did buy into the Knights vow, where they were able to buy the tickets for the playoffs at a lower price if they promised not to resell it on StubHub. And that definitely had an effect. And as you mentioned, the first two games have been solid, you know, steel gray jerseys, you know, in the stands for sure. I mean, it's been, I think it's been the most solid, unified crowds, you know, behind the Golden Knights banner that I've seen all season.
No, well, that's exactly what I said. I mean, this is what we were hoping for. I remember you
this
and
is
I
more than we hoped
yeah.
for. This is
well, no, I mean, as far as the fans go, I remember us. I remember Alan and I looking at each other during the Minnesota Wild game when they started heckling Fleury, and we're like, "Oh my God, it's loud!" And they are not cheering for Fleury; they're heckling him because they just scored a goal against him, and there is way too many Minnesota Wild fans in here. And you asked Gerard Gallant that. He said, oh, it doesn't bother me. And yet the players were saying it is kind of disturbing when you hear the other team cheering when a goal is scored against you. So I think right now everyone is satisfied with what is going on inside of that arena. And I think the props like the helmet, I think, you know, the same company that Water FX, they did the whole castle too, didn't they?
Yeah, they worked on the castle stage that you see at one end of the arena. They actually worked on that as well. And this helmet prop is going to be used, according to Johnny Greco, it's going to be used before every game.
Is this going to go on next season, too, or is it just going to be the playoffs? Or is this going to be the new staple for the Golden Knights when they come on the ice at the beginning of games?
Well, I was told it was specifically the playoff game.
Okay.
So I don't think it'll happen during the regular season. It's something that they came out. You know, Johnny Greco definitely wanted to up the ante for the playoffs. And I knew he'd have a few tricks up his sleeve to roll out. And I also asked the players, what was it like to skate through that thing? The funny thing was, to get through it, they actually did say both Fleury and I think John Merrill and maybe Alex Tuck mentioned this as well to me. You actually have to kind of take a step to the left and then make sure that you skate through that thing. The last thing you want is like James Neal, like rolling an ankle, you know, skating through a giant prop like that. But it's been a huge success. And the bottom line is it riles up the fans. They love it. And I think the players feed off that.
What do you think about the Lady Liberty that's going on in the New York right next door?
Well, I mean, this whole community has embraced this team, like you said. I think there's a couple factors. You know, we saw the huge Statue of Liberty replica with the jersey and obviously the statue made out of chocolate of Fleury. And also there's a gigantic six-foot puck that's wedged into like an elevator shaft, I think, down there by near the Flamingo corner on the Strip.
And for the record...
And I think there's a couple. There's a couple of things going on. Number one, it's our first major league team. It's our first season, and you know they have the whole stage to themselves. And you know, as you mentioned, it's almost a collegiate college football style, you know, emotional passion that you see. You know, you had mentioned I think about 3,000 people over at the training center to say goodbye to the team when they went to L.A. And it's, no one does it better than Las Vegas. We have every trick in the book in terms of, you know, entertainment, technology. And the gigantic helmet really showed that. I mean, that was pure Vegas. And that's the thing about our market is that we can get away with pushing the envelope like few other markets in this country.
And for the record, Coach Gallant says he will not have a chocolate statue made of himself. And the jersey on the Statue of Liberty, from what I was told, it cost $100,000.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
It was paid for by Budweiser, which is why it says Budweiser on the back of the jersey.
Course.
But, you know, still, look, it's $100,000. I mean, that's pretty damn cool for someone to pay for that. Even if they put their name on it, that's fine with me. But $100,000 for that statue. But the thing I notice about all this is even out in the suburbs, I mean, I live down in the southwest part of the city. I can't even count how many people I see every single day with Golden Knights stickers on their car. I go into the store, I go to a restaurant, I see people wearing Golden Knights hats, people What's wearing that? Sweatshirts. I mean, this city, even people like my son, he's not a sports fan. He told me yesterday that he watched the replay of the game on Friday or on Thursday afternoon. He came home from school and he watched the replay of the game while he was getting ready for dinner. And I'm like, he says people in his school, his elementary school, they're giving scores during in the morning announcements to let the kids know, hey, the Golden Knights won. He said, I mean, that's to me, The city has totally embraced this team.
Oh, it's not just, I don't think it's just the city. I think it's well beyond just the city of Las Vegas. The sporting community in general throughout the world has embraced this team. It's funny because I had somebody yesterday commenting on Facebook saying, who cares? And I was like laughing at the dude, like, seriously, who cares? The literate world cares, okay? I mean, it's like, really, dude? Where the hell have you been? Are you hiding under a rock? Who cares? Please, don't comment on my Facebook page if you're that moronic. I mean, seriously, who cares? Really, dude? Well, I mean, that was like almost offensive. Like, who cares? Like, really? Are you so bored you just have to make comments moronically like that on a Facebook page? Like, who cares about the Golden Knights? It's like, the stupidity of that comment seriously made me laugh. But one other thing I wanted to say, Alan, is, you know, it's funny you mentioned in the menu, and besides, he is Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Definitely check him out. But, capitalism, brother. Those Golden Knights you talked about, there is even talk about that giant helmet being made into like toys or souvenirs. Shocking, right?
Yeah, I got a great kick out of that. I actually emailed Brian Killingsworth, the chief marketing officer, as soon as I saw this, you know, gigantic helmet dropping down. I said, you know, these guys are going to somehow monetize
this, of course,
and commercialize it, and they're already looking into making kind of a tiny little replica of that thing. With, I mean, I think having the glowing lights and having the kind of that little lighting system, that to me was the whole, when I saw that thing on Wednesday night for game one, I just thought the delivery and the choreographed package was just fantastic. And yeah, they're looking into making a little toy replica, I guess, for next season.
The Golden Knights are, next year, it'll be the Golden Knights brought to you by Cirque du Soleil. I mean, that's Las Vegas. He is Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. The Business Minute went a little longer than that. And, hey, we need more than an hour. It's just that simple. Alan, we appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk to you real soon.
Have a wonderful day, and we'll go for game three tonight.
Looking forward to it, man. That is in L.A. tonight, 7 o'clock. I can't wait. Listen, we're going to take a real quick break. We're going to try to come back with, I know Max or Nelas has a little bit lost. Yeah. He'll hopefully be here very soon. I know his manager was out front, so we're going to take a break. Hopefully we'll come back with him, and we got about 15 minutes left. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this coming Friday night, April 20th at the Cox Pavilion, UNLV student and undefeated bantamweight contender Max Ornelas, correct? Yeah. Am I pronouncing it right? Yeah. I want to make sure I get that right, because it's a name we're hopefully going to be hearing for a while, but he will take his stablemate at Roy Jones Jr. Promotions, Tony Lopez, on in a 10-round main event, and it is for the vacant World Boxing Association, North American Boxing Association, bantamweight title, correct?
Yes.
How excited are you, man?
I'm excited, man. It's I think a lot of people are anticipating this fight. I'm just excited. I worked hard. I prepared the best I could, and I'm excited for it.
Well, we're excited to have you in studio. This will be the other part of the fact. This is this, and it will be the first fight Missy and I have covered together. We'll be there Friday night. I'm looking really
very
forward
excited
to it. And I mean, a student athlete, but boxing. What led you into boxing?
It's just something that my family's always been to. They would always watch fights, Corrales, Arturo Gatti, Oscar De La Hoya. And I don't know, just one day my brother asked, hey, you want to go to the gym? And I said, yeah, let's go to the gym. And from there, I liked it.
And that was it. And how about, I mean, a guy like Roy Jones Jr., obviously being, you know, from Detroit, I was brought up around a pretty big gym named the Kronx Gym, and Emmanuel Stewart, one of the greatest, I think, boxing trainers, promoters of all time. He was incredible. And, you know, Tommy Hearns, some other great fighters coming out of there. But Roy Jones Jr., you talk about a big name. At one time, I think that guy was probably pound for pound one of the greatest fighters in the world. And how much does that help you out, fighting behind a name like that?
It's awesome, man. It's someone I looked up to since my amateur days. I would watch his videos all the time, especially before fights, just because of what he could do, you know, his athletic ability. And sometimes I would just imagine myself, especially his signature hook, I would try to throw it, but other than that, it's great, man. Having a person like that behind you, it's great.
Man, talk about a signature look. That guy would knock people out. Also joining us in studio is your manager, trainee Gil Martinez. Happy to have you here, my friend. And tell me what makes this kid special.
You know, one of the things that for him is his drive. You know, he is so driven. This is something that he absolutely loves. You know, I've been training him since he was around 8 or 9 years old. And I could probably count in my two hands the days that he's missed the gym. This kid, you know, sometimes,
dedication.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to tell him, man, you can't, don't come today. But, you know, I'll give you an example. A couple of times, one time he rolled his ankle. I told him, okay, Maxie, you don't come to the gym till it's better. No, he made his mom the next day go to the store. He bought one of those boots, put it on, strapped it up, taped over it.
Wow.
Put his shoe on and came to the gym and trained. You know, so his drive, his dedication, and the love for the sport that he has is what's gotten him to where he's at now.
Well, excited at Cox Pavilion. You guys can get your tickets right now. The place holds like 2,500 to 3,000 people. UNLV women's basketball plays there, the Summer League. But I'll tell you, it's an intimate environment. It is going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to this. You're taking on a stablemate of yours, a guy you probably know pretty well in Tony Lopez. Does that give you an advantage or a disadvantage? Because I got to believe he knows your tendencies as well, right?
No, yeah, I think it's maybe an advantage for both of us just because I think I've been on two or three of his cards, and he's been on my card, so I know what he does, and I'm pretty sure he knows what I do, so I think it's going to be a good entertaining fight.
You said you're predicting a late-round knockout from what I saw. Seventh, yeah. Eighth round, it goes 10. So if I'm going to put my money down in Vegas, I'm looking at the eighth round?
Seventh.
Okay.
There you go.
I like that. Okay. Well, you heard that right, yeah. Now. I'm on my way to the Palms after this to put my money down. But what are you the most confident about when facing Tony Lopez, and what concerns you the most?
I think I'm just all around a better fighter. If he wants to take it on the inside or the outside, I think I could adapt to either style. But yeah, it's just I think I could adapt better. I think I'm faster. I think I'm smarter. And in the ring, we're going to see Friday night.
What would this fight, winning this fight, do for you and for your career going forward?
It'll be awesome, man. I think it'll open a lot more opportunities. And I think that this is my first, it's sort of a step-up fight. So I think with this fight, it's going to open a lot more doors for me.
And Babyface, how'd you get that name?
Look at him. I mean, me and him are
like, where did that start from? Were you born that way? Your mom's right? Like, that's yeah. It, baby face. Like,
the baby, no, it's the baby faced assassin.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You want to talk about a good name. I mean, see, we have the same.
Like
shame,
a hyena, right? You just kill and smile at the same time.
Yeah, right. Couldn't I be the baby faced sportscaster if I shave?
How did that start?
I'm not sure. I think
one of the great all time boxers is Marco Antonio Barrera, and that was his nickname. And, you know, people think that, you know, he's like 15 years old, you know, so that fits him perfect. And not only that, but he's a real killer in there. You know, I said this before, like, if you see Maxie walking down the street, you would never know that this kid's a killer. You know, so many pros have come into our gym to, you know, get some sparring. And a couple of times the person they were supposed to spar with didn't show up or was running late. So they would ask me, hey, do you have anybody that we could spar with? And I would point at him. And they're like, that kid? And I'd be like, yeah, he's young, but he's good. And, you know, two or three rounds into the sparring, they would find out why we named him the Baby-Faced Assassin.
Well, you know, with a name like the Baby-Faced Assassin, the problem is you're in a sport called boxing. So you really got to make sure to keep that name. You got to protect that baby face, right? I mean, in a year and a half from now, if you don't do well, what do we, the mashed-up-faced assassin? I mean, so you gotta stay healthy. Listen, we really appreciate you coming. It is this Friday night, 7 o'clock Pacific time start at the Cox Pavilion. Get your tickets now. Ringside seats, I think, are $100, all the way down to $25 to get into the ring. Tickets available. Missy and I will be there. I'm pretty sure Max and Gil will both be there. I hope they
we'll
are.
Try.
Right? Yeah, you guys are definitely going to show up. And I hope Tony Lopez shows up. Don't be scared, Tony. The inside-outside game. You know, show up. Help this kid move forward. Listen, we're pulling for you. We really appreciate you coming down.
Awesome, man. So thank you guys for having me.
All right, Gil.
Thank you.
Hey, final words, man. Tell them, what are they going to see Friday night, Gil?
you know, they're going to see the rise of a huge up-and-coming star. You know, there's a lot of things coming down the road for Maxi. This is just the next step, you know, for his, you know, career. And I think this kid will be world champion within a year.
Like it, Max Ornelas. Remember that name. You're going to hear it a lot. Hey, listen, we got to fly. We'll take a real quick. Oh, no, we don't need a break, do we? Okay, just go right ahead. Let's go into 51's report. We got to quickly do that. 51's on the road. They're coming back 3-7, not off to a great start, but they will be back in town this coming week. I think
on
they're
Tuesday.
Back on Tuesday,
back
right?
Tuesday, yep.
And they're back all week, and they're playing the
should be noted.
Fresno. They're playing Fresno all week.
Yeah. Fresno Grizzlies, is it?
Grizzlies, yep.
Yeah,
Grizzlies,
should be noted right. On Tuesday. They're also wearing the Reyes de Plata
uniforms
for the first time this season because it's the Latino heritage thing that minor league baseball is doing. So they'll be wearing the Silver Kings, which is, I guess, what it translates to in English, uniforms, which I have a shirt. The logo is super, super cool. And, you know, they'll be doing that for the first time this Tuesday when they play Fresno.
Check it out. Tuesday and then Thursday, of course, back to Dollar Beer Night. And I believe this Friday is the fireworks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Again, the second fireworks of the 51s. That'll be pretty cool. So, again, 51s brought to you by the Las Vegas 51s. They are out of this world. Check them out. It's always a great time at Cashman. Win or lose, man, we have fun. And it is the last season at Cashman Field. They'll be moving up to Summerlin next year. Also wanted to say real quick before we get out of here, again, we will be Facebook Live again Friday night or Thursday night because the Knights will be back regardless. They've won the first two.
Yeah.
So Thursday night we'll be down at T-Mobile Arena. We'll be doing Facebook Live from there. Have some more stuff.
There's no guarantee they play Thursday night.
Well, you're right. There is no guarantee they play Thursday.
Although if they lose one of these games in L.A., they will be playing Thursday.
There is a guarantee the Vegas Knights will play at T-Mobile Arena again. That is a lock.
Yes.
And no matter what happens in L.A., so we will be back down there again. And last thing I wanted to say, the NBA playoffs also started yesterday. And you know what? Shocking, but NBA playoffs without Steph Curry, without Kyrie Irving, I mean, it's a whole different look. And without Kawhi Leonard, we talked about it during break, makes me sick. The dude just decides not to show up and play for the San Antonio Spurs.
For me, as a Sixers fan, welcome back to the playoffs, Philly.
A true deal. Hopefully they'll get Joel Embiid back because you add him to that mix and that Philadelphia team is very dangerous. Listen, we're out of time. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman for Missy Lynn, Jose Valonte for Chris Magnum Chapman. I want to thank everyone for coming in. I want to thank Max and Gil for being here. Check him out Friday night. And I also want to thank...
Don't forget Alan Snell.
Oh, yeah. Can't forget about Alan Snell. I also want to thank Marc-Andre Fleury. Shea Theodore, sorry I lost your interview. We appreciate it. And, of course, Tomas Tatar. We're out of time. This is Out of Line. We're back next Sunday. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, radio home of the Vegas Golden Knights.